This is F-Society IRC Podcast, a Mr. Robot show. I'm your moderator of this chat, Hirosha Shive. This is F-Society IRC Podcast, a Mr. Robot show. I'm your moderator of this chat, Hirosha Shive.
Hello, and welcome to another show. This is Hirosha Shive, your moderator of this chat, as we continue our discussion of the movies that influence the television show Mr. Robot. This is F-Society IRC Podcast, the Mr. Robot show. So this is The Matrix. It was initially intended to be, and is still numbered, episode 3. It has a bit of a subtitle, which is, "You can't like me at my John Wick if you don't like me at my Woe." And this is the review of the movie, The Matrix. There was an initial audio goof, and so I had to re-record this episode. So, with this episode versus Back to the Future 2 and The Fight Club, The Matrix, it's not really directly spoken of within, like, either the show itself, like Back to the Future 2, or even discussed really heavily by anyone that's reviewed or talked about the show or subreddits discussion. And initially, the first season, yeah, there was some discussion about The Matrix. But for the most part, there's not really much discussion. And I think a lot of it has to do with a bit of the movie, its age, its influence, and really probably more to do with the trilogy as a whole than the individual movie, The Matrix. But before we get into the discussion about, like, how The Matrix has influenced Mr. Robot and the threads that have been woven into the show, let's talk about the movie The Matrix itself. So the movie stars Lawrence Fishburne, Keanu Reeves, Carrie Ann Moss, and Hugo Weaving. It is directed by the Wachowski sisters, and it came out in 1999, a great year of movies. Another film that came out that year was Fight Club. And like Fight Club, both in a positive and negative way, The Matrix has influenced movies, particularly action films, for the next, directly for the next 10 years, but you can still see some of the elements in action films now, how they're filmed, wire, CGI, and fight scenes stem from The Matrix. And mostly what it is like The Matrix curbed a lot of the Hong Kong film styles with the particular, like, wire action scenes and the action scenes themselves, how they were filmed and what was done, and just made it, like, mainstream. So basically, like, that style of action film has been around for a very long time. It just didn't really hit that global or American audience or Western audience, if you will, directly. You know, John Woo has a significant influence on a lot of the action films at the time, but I think The Matrix might be like that peak, I guess you could say, maybe second wave of Hong Kong action films, or Asian films in general. I know the genre of action films change with, what is it called, The Raid, where you saw a more realistic fighting style. You might even say that might have gone a little bit earlier with the, Bongka films that came out of, was it the Philippines or Korea? I forget which Asian country it came out of, but it wasn't from the Hong Kong. But The Raid has really dramatically influenced films. You see that with the John Wick films. You see that with a lot of the action films now, where it's more realistic style. Some give credit to Jason Bourne, but Jason Bourne, it was very cut, phonetic, for the simple fact that even though Matt Damon may have trained a lot to do those action scenes and styles, he's not a martial artist. Keanu Reeves, on the other hand, has, you know, spent years training, and particularly because of The Matrix, learned Kung Fu, just like in the movie. And a number of the action stars that are part of The Raid and the new wave of action films are, in fact, martial artists, and that's why the fight scenes are far, far better than they have been in the past, because they have the athleticism of the actor. And I would say for the first time in maybe, at least in the Western part, in a quite a good group of time, I would say a decade, you actually have action stars that can do the action scenes but also can act, which is very important in this new modern age of filmmaking, if you will. So, you know, The Matrix itself, you know, a very influential film. I remember seeing it in the movie theater. Yes, I'm kind of aging to myself here. I saw it actually, I think, 3 times in the movie theater. I saw it twice on the big screen. And then I saw it in a drive-in. So, yes, some drive-ins, you know, still do exist out there. And I'm fortunate enough to have lived near some drive-ins in my time. But it's an amazing film. Personally, I think it still holds up, particularly story-wise. Effects, like with the CGI, which was very revolutionary. And there's another aspect I forget to mention sometimes with some of the films that we were talking about. Video games. Fight Club, The Matrix have influenced the video games and video game storytelling and the action style as well. It has influenced other mediums, particularly with the bullet time. If you ever played those Max Payne games, or any of those, I would say, mid-aught video games. Finally, I guess like you say, Matrix came out in 1989. And if you're unfamiliar with bullet time, it's like that slow-mo bendy where you can see like the bullets passing by you, or a particular action sequence, you know, a knife or a punch goes by you, you go slow-mo, and then the actor like bends around the action and then just starts whooping on the particular villain or whatever in the moment. So in the movie, the big scene is Keanu Reeves dodges bullets, and it was a very amazing action sequence at the time. I think it's called Bullet Time, and it was used in video games like Max Payne and a few other single shooter action games. But, you know, it's been almost 20 years since The Matrix has come out, so the CGI is still a little wonky. You can see where the effects and the cutouts are now. Story-wise, it's still very good. The hacking parts are kind of whack. You know, you can see and read the code. But the social engineering aspect of the hacking that they do within the world of The Matrix It's still on par. It's still something that hackers do, and it's still a bit realistic. So overall, the movie holds up. I totally forgot to read the synopsis of what the movie is, just in case anyone out there's never heard or seen the movie. It's basically, you know, a computer hacker learns from the mysterious rebels about the true nature of his reality and his role in the war against his controllers. Basically, the film is about reality and unreality. In the case of the main character played by Keanu Reeves, whose name is Neo, he is a hacker. He realizes that there's some wackiness with the world around him, but he can't explain it. He is given an red pill, blue pill, which is kind of an Alice in Wonderland thing with when you Alice in Wonderland from that story. Have you ever seen the cartoon or the movies where she has a choice between taking the one side of the mushroom, I believe it's on the caterpillar. One will make her bigger, one will make her smaller, but she doesn't know which, and she takes it. And pretty much the same thing, like, I believe the red pill opens up and allows Keanu Reeves to continue on his journey and find out what exactly it is that Lawrence Fishburne's character, a character that he's been looking for, Morpheus, is doing. Like, what is he rebelling? Why is he going after certain, I guess you could say, infrastructures within the government or whatever? And the blue pill will keep him sedated and he will continue on living his existence. Takes the red pill, and that is part of, like, this weird Gamergate alt-right and some misogyny things going on the internet, that, you know, these guys are awake because they've taken the red pill, and it's up against SWJs and just a bunch of bullshit. Neo-Nazi supremacists, this, all the negative isms you could think of wrapped in the concept of taking the red pill. So that I wouldn't say this is Matrix's fault, but that notion, that meme, if you will, that idea is out there because of that, of this film. So yeah, the character Neo, he takes the red pill, he wakes up and realizes that he is not in the real world, he's in a virtual reality world, and this virtual reality world is controlled by robots who have subdued and enslaved humans and use them as batteries to fuel their existence. Doesn't really get into the too heavily into the mechanics of why the robots necessarily need humans for human batteries. I realized that they talked about in the Anti-Matrix, which is an extension of the movie, or the trilogy, I should say, about the war and the nuclear power and the nukes going off and destroying the Earth, but there's all sorts of other alternative power sources that probably could have been utilized. But anyways, for the purpose of this movie, for the first one, excuse me, the humans are batteries. They're used to fuel the existence of robots. They go about doing their business. I always wonder what exactly the robots are doing. Some, you know, patrol the programs, patrol the Matrix and keep humans sedated so they won't wake up and stop being batteries, basically, or try to go after the robots again. But you don't need the entire robot species doing that. What were the robots doing? Were they trying to repair the Earth? Were they building their own society? Like, did they play card games? Make music? I'd be really curious, and if you've watched the rest of the trilogy, I guess some robots didn't quite like their existence as robots and came into the Matrix and part of the world to exist in there because it's better than what they were doing, which I guess was, I don't know, boring or something. But anyways, just for the first movie alone, it was just basically see the reality around you, the world that you're being projected is false, it is a false narrative, and it's a controlling mechanism to keep you sedated, if you want to boil down the premise of the film. And then, once again, a scrappy group of rebels are tearing down this controlling mechanism and the power structure behind it to free all the people. And to some extent, you can kind of see some of that influence within the Mr. Robot universe, with the fact that there's, once again, a scrappy group of rebels that are, in the eyes of Elliot, our main narrator, unreliable narrator, by the way, character, that are trying to take down the controlling mechanism of the 1% that has a hold of society. And how, in this case, the big controlling mechanism that's affecting reality is money. In the Matrix, it's just basically the reality itself, the code that sedates the human existence, if you will. And the other aspect of it, which kind of gets built out more in the trilogy, but is hinted heavily in the Matrix, is that Neo is the one. He's the one that is supposed to be able to unravel the code, that the software code, if you will, that the robots have put in place to sedate humans. Somehow unravel it and bring the entire system down. And he kind of has like kind of like a Jesus Christ kind of like a figure, which is always a template in a lot of these Saber movies, and just because of Western culture and the heavy influence of Christianity and the book of the Bible, or particularly the New Testament, you always see that Jesus Christ motif. And so you kind of see that a tiny bit in the first season of Mr. Robot. But as you progress through season 2 and 3, you realize, even though there's some other Christian, like, analogies and themes within Mr. Robot, particularly the prison scene where there's two, with Elliot rejecting the notion of God and how God, you know, just his rejection speech, if you will. And then you have Mr. Robot talking to Elliot in the prison, and saying how Elliot was supposed to be his God, and Mr. Robot persona was supposed to be his prophet, the one that's supposed to spread the word of Elliot, if you will, or F-Society, and help bring down this infrastructure that they all live in. But you begin to realize that this whole Saber complex that Elliot has, and even to some extent Mr. Robot has, And we as an audience going along this journey and believing in Elliot and believing in F Society is very false and unrealistic for the simple fact that, you know, Elliot is not this godlike figure. He's an extremely flawed, extremely broken person. And the manner upon which he's attempting to bring down the infrastructure, an infrastructure that has so many tentacles and everywhere and has so many means of combating any form of rebellion to the point of actually co-opting it, as Mr. Philip Price broke down for both Tyler Willock and Elliot, as he was the Mr. Willock persona, that it's a very difficult thing to rebel against the existing reality you're living in. And I think the template, or at least a familiar template, once again, like Fight Club with the Tyler Durden thing and taking the narrative of what happens after you destroy the financial infrastructure. I think some of the writers are commenting on the fact that the whole concept of the Jesus Christ Savior figure doesn't really work. It doesn't work in reality. But revolutions don't quite go that way. They're extremely messy, and they're more than just one figure, and more than just even one singular cause. And that breakdown, the consequences, particularly when you see what happens to Elliot's followers with Trenton and Moby and Romero. I still hate Zia Romero, and what happens with Dom, even though she wasn't a follower of Elliot, getting sucked up into the bullshit, if you will. And as I explained in my horror-esque review of The Hitcher, and some of the horror elements of season 3, you know, Dom's going to be a body snatcher type of a person as a result of Elliot and Darlene's actions. And non-actions in some sense. But I think what Sam Ismail and the writers are doing here with the using of the very familiar tropes and templates of the Matrix, of the allusions to it to some extent, because it's something very familiar. When people think of hackers, they think of, you know, the hacker movie, the Matrix, Alias. Like, some of the very negative tropes, not negative tropes, but the very, like, horrible depictions of hacking that occur on television movies. And also the concept of the scrappy rebels, if you will, taking shot at the existing infrastructure, that is not a one-shot deal. I mean, yes, to some extent, Elliot understood, even with his split personality and wrestling with himself, that there needed to be more to be done than just simply encrypting the data infrastructure of Evil Corp, if you will. That's why he had the plan to destroy the paper records. And also with Darlene, to some extent, what she was doing by using social media to some extent, but social engineering to push back against the image of Evil Corp with the similar antics of F Society and going against the government. Even if Elliot may not actually approved or agreed with those particular actions, it was still kind of sort of part of the plan, if you will. It's not a one-shot deal. It's not like you can take a shot to end and then the virus is gone. It's a all together combined with the repudiation, if you will, of the Fight Club, the concept of taking down the financial infrastructure and there's no consequences, that being a band of scrappy rebels, you're not going to go down a trench and shoot a photon torpedo and bam, the Death Star is destroyed, and, you know, la la la, you're still the heroes. I mean, granted, they did that, what? Almost three times in the Star Wars movies. You know, the Empire still exists and becomes the First Order, you know, morphs and stuff like that. So I guess in the Star Wars analogy, they still are fighting the Empire. It's not just one-shot deal, even though the Emperor's dead. And they have taken much of the Galactic Empire down. They haven't taken the entire infrastructure down in it itself. It's a much more complex thing to be rebels and even to some extent governance with the New Republic. which they kind of commented on in both Last Jedi and Force Awakens. But anyways, taking this notion that a lot of movies do and realizing that there is a lot more to a revolution or a rebellion, a lot more that needs to be done, and it has to be, I think, the concept, I think, the last two seasons that Sam Ismail is going to, is it has to be a more of a holistic approach. You can't just go, like I said, down the trench and shoot a photon torpedo. Or in the case of The Matrix, have this one great savior solve the code and solve your problems. It has to be a combination of things and activities and people together in various ways to be able to take down the 1% of the 1%. Right now, with the current state of the Mr. Robot universe, that is not the case. Pretty much, on Elliot's side, everyone's either dead or defeated, and the cause is almost, in ever since the word, lost. And that's why he's back to ground zero, if you will, and repurposing himself to go again once after the 1% of the 1%. But I think now maybe the lessons have been learned and he's seeking a more holistic approach and he's not the one savior. I guess you say him and the personality and Mr. Robot are going to work together. And you might see maybe Elliot gathering followers. I'm not sure. Who knows what's going to happen in season 4. There's so many balls up in the air with Brave Tom Revere showing up, with Dom and as the inside mole, with Angela, you know, nervous breakdown, and heir apparent to Philip Price, maybe, or to E-Corp in general, Tyler Wellick as the CEO, the Washington Township plant still has to get out of town through the waterways of the United States to the Congo. You know, there's a lot going on, plus even the restoration of the digital records of E-Corp, the global infrastructure, and as we see, the continued decaying of New York, which is going from the kind of Disneyland facade that New York has at its center, if you will, to the kind of grimy and gritty 70s New York. Like, I guess you could say almost this is like the real face of New York as the decay is going on and the trash and the way that people behave and acting in the background and even to some extent within the show itself. You still have to deal with that. So there's a lot going on there. And to pretty much sum it up, I think with this film and its influence and how heavily it's influenced the narrative story arc, once again putting like a Jesus-like character front and center into a story, the scrappy band of rebels taking down, you know, the illusion, if you will, the controlling mechanism of society, which is an ongoing theme for a lot of these post-apocalyptic or just narrative rebellion films. But it's more complex than that, and we need to evolve beyond just scrappy rebels or individuals in a one-shot solution and something more complex in narrative storytelling, more in-depth, if you will, of seeing how a rebellion goes and how it can work or go beyond just the one-shot trench approach into a more, like, all the different elements of story narrative telling you can tell about a full-blown rebellion and all its complexity, ongoing complexities that you can draw from either history, time, or just from your imagination, if you will. So that's it. I would highly recommend watching The Matrix again and just looking at it from years gone by if you haven't seen it in a while and just looking at the story and seeing how, while narratively it does hold up, and thematically, it has some shortcomings, if you will, and storytelling and narrative speaking has evolved over time in the last almost 20 years, and it's thanks to The Matrix at least getting a shot in the arm of different genres and stuff like that. But I think we are now in the age of where there's a significant amount of maturity in storytelling and different ways of telling stories and going more in depth and allowing for growth within the story, particularly with these shorter seasons, at least as far as American television goes, allowing for more time per episode, but shorter seasons overall, where you're not doing a lot of padding or filling episodes, and you're able to tell very consistent and cohesive story arcs or story narratives and plot out things into a beginning, a middle, and an end, much similar to, like, I guess you could say a book or even a video game to some extent. So that's it. I thank you all very much for listening. You can help support, you know, F Society RSC podcast by either going onto our website and donating there through PayPal. As always, there's links in the show notes to where you can purchase the various seasons of Mr. Robot through Amazon links. And you can also purchase this movie and the other movies that have been discussed in the 7-part series about the narrative influences on the Mr. Robot story through the Amazon links. And if you're really, really, really into it, you can also give whatever favorite flavor choice of cryptocurrency you like. This is Hiroja Shai, your moderator, logging off now, and until next time.
This has been a Hiroja Shai Space Odyssey Network production.